Welcome back to Deep Dive. If you are joining us today, you are exactly the kind of person we make this show for, you know, the learner, the person who really wants to cut through the noise, understand the machinery of the world around them, and just have that aha moment without drowning in information overload.
Absolutely. It's great to be here.
Today, we have a custom-tailored deep dive just for you. Anyone who follows California real estate already knows about the notorious red tape. You've seen the headlines, the endless zoning meetings, the environmental lawsuits, the delays.
Right. It's everywhere.
But today, we're going deeper than the headlines. We are dissecting the actual invisible plumbing of the permitting process to understand a massive, seemingly unsolvable problem. And we're unpacking a really fascinating systemic blueprint to fix it.
Yeah, and if you look at the backdrop behind me today, you'll see this shifting, intricate, animated architectural blueprint of a futuristic Los Angeles.
It looks amazing, by the way.
Thanks. It represents the core of our discussion today. We are tearing into a comprehensive 15-point editorial blueprint. It was written by Will Wright from the Los Angeles chapter of the American Institute of Architects, or AIALA. Mm-hmm. And we're also looking at a stack of supporting research documents that detail the severe infrastructure and housing crises spanning Los Angeles and the broader state of California.
So our mission today is to figure out exactly why building a home in California is so agonizingly slow and expensive. And we're going to explore what this blueprint calls a development revolution.
A development revolution, exactly.
The goal here is to transform Los Angeles from this reactive bureaucracy into a proactive city of YAIA, all before the 2028 Olympics.
Which is a crucial detail because those 2028 Olympic and Paralympic Games are functioning as a massive pressure cooker for the city.
Yeah, a real ticking clock.
Right. They act as both a strict deadline and a real-time laboratory for these sweeping changes. LA has a very narrow window to permanently alter its civic DNA before the eyes of the entire world are on it.
Okay, let's unpack this, because we have to start with the staggering mathematical paradox of California's housing crisis. We hear about the housing shortage constantly, but the actual gap between what is required and what is actually being built feels completely disconnected from reality.
It really does.
How big is this shortfall, practically speaking?
The sheer scale is difficult to comprehend. By the year 2030, the state of California is mandated to produce 2.5 million new homes.
2.5 million.
Yeah, and drilling down into those numbers, that includes a need for roughly 100,000 to 120,000 affordable homes every single year.
Wow.
But the reality on the ground is that the state is currently producing only about 20,000 affordable homes annually.
So that's less than one-fifth of the required pace.
Exactly, less than a fifth. To put the broader crisis in perspective, California ranks second to last in the entire nation when it comes to housing units per capita.
So we are moving in slow motion while the deficit compounds year after year. But what stands out in this material is that the root cause of this crisis isn't necessarily a lack of ambition or even a lack of funding, right?
No, not at all.
Capital and political will are often sitting right there on the table. The real culprit is a concept the author refers to as toxic ground.
Toxic ground is a perfect description of the reality developers face. It's this paralyzing mixture of regulatory blight and bureaucratic fragmentation. Mm-hmm. It prevents even the most well-funded, well-intentioned projects from ever breaking ground. The brick and development process itself operates as an active accelerant of the housing crisis.
It feels like an environment designed to punish anyone trying to build.
It really does.
If a builder takes their exact same project, same materials, same blueprints, and tries to execute it in a state with a different regulatory environment, say, Texas, what does the math actually look like?
Oh, it is night and day. Hard construction costs, which are just the physical materials and the labor, they're 2.3 times higher in California than they are in Texas.
2.3 times?
Yeah.
Just for materials and labor?
Yep. And the timelines are even more shocking. It takes an average of 49 months to complete a project in California. That is 22 months longer than in Texas.
That's almost two extra years.
Almost two extra years of just carrying costs, paying interest on loans, and waiting for approvals before a single family can even move in.
Wait, so instead of just building, developers are spending 2 years acting as messengers between different bureaucratic factions. Mm. The blueprint compares the permitting process in Los Angeles to navigating a 12-headed hydra.
A very accurate metaphor.
Because there are 12 siloed city departments. Mm. Planning, building and safety, water and power, the fire department, and so on. But the real friction is that they operate in sequential isolation.
That sequential isolation is the killer. You finish your review with one department, and only then are you allowed to get in line for the next one.
It's like having to wait in 12 different DMV lines.
Exactly like 12 DMV lines. And if you finally reach department number 8 and they demand a slight modification to the physical layout, oh no.
That change resets your progress.
Yeah.
You have to go all the way back to department number 1 to get the new layout reapproved across the board.
That is maddening.
Affordable housing projects are taking up to 25 months just to get a ready-to-issue permit. That is 2 years before a shovel even touches the dirt. And it's crucial to understand that these are not natural market forces. These are deliberate policy choices.
Right, and if there are policy choices, that means they can be unchosen. And that leads us to the structural and regulatory reforms proposed to rewind and rewire this whole machine.
Yes, the solutions phase.
The blueprint suggests starting with a major structural overhaul called One Department, One Door. How does that actually dismantle the 12-headed Hydra?
The proposal is to appoint a development services czar, essentially a deputy mayor armed with the executive authority to force all 12 of these warring departments to coordinate.
Force them into the same room, basically.
Exactly. Beneath this czar would be a permanent expedited review unit, or ERU. So instead of waiting in 12 different lines, a developer is assigned a single dedicated case manager.
Okay, that makes sense.
They utilize concurrent digital reviews. That means the fire department and building safety are evaluating the exact same plans at the exact same time.
And a massive component of that ERU is the review lock-in. Because once a project passes a certain milestone in the review process, departments are strictly prohibited from arbitrarily adding new comments or changing their minds or making new demands late in the game.
Right, no late-stage surprises.
It gives builders actual predictability.
What's fascinating here is how this structural shift fundamentally changes the posture of the city from reactive to proactive. You can't just fix the permitting, you have to fix how the city envisions its physical space. This blueprint highlights the severe need for a chief design officer to unify the aesthetic and functional vision across all departments. It also calls for a mandatory 5-year capital infrastructure plan, or CIP.
Which is wild, because Los Angeles is currently the only major U.S. city operating without a multi-year capital infrastructure plan.
The only one.
How does a city of that size function without a master plan for its own physical footprint?
Well, it functions very poorly. It results in a massive backlog of reactive maintenance. There are over 50,000 pending requests for broken sidewalks alone.
50,000?
Yeah, alongside 200,000 empty tree wells. Without a master plan coordinating these efforts, a city might repave a street in January, tear it up in February to fix a water main, and then tear it up again in April to install bike lanes.
It's just a staggering waste of resources. So that covers the dysfunction at the city level. But when we zoom out to the state level, the toxic ground gets even worse.
It really does.
If you are a builder trying to standardize a housing design to achieve economies of scale, you can't just stamp it out across California because there are 540 independent local jurisdictions.
And each of those 540 jurisdictions has its own unique interpretations of the building code. A project on one side of a municipal border might face entirely different standards than an identical project one street over.
Just complete chaos.
That level of local code chaos completely destroys any chance of standardizing production. So to fix this, the blueprint proposes establishing one uniform statewide baseline code that explicitly preempts these local modifications.
And they pair that with a functional state-level appeals process, right? Because the current appeals system is so opaque, it has barely been utilized in the last 15 years.
Exactly. It's essentially useless right now.
While we are talking about opaque laws destroying housing, we have to look at the condo liability crisis. This was arguably the most shocking statistic in this entire stack of materials.
Yeah, this one is tough to swallow.
Why are developers in California almost exclusively building rental apartments instead of homes that regular people can actually buy?
It comes down to a staggering number. Between 2011 and 2021, of all the newly built multifamily units in California, only 3% were offered for sale as condominiums.
3%.
3% in a 10-year span.
How does a law basically eradicate an entire sector of the housing market?
It's driven by a 10-year defect liability law. This statute allows homeowners associations to sue developers for virtually any non-structural defect up to a decade after the building is completed.
A decade? That's a huge window.
Because the risk window is so long, condominium development has become virtually uninsurable. For instance, an architect working on one downtown LA project was forced to secure a $25 million insurance policy purely to cover potential defect claims.
$25 million just for the insurance?
Yep. When insurance costs that much, developers simply refuse to build condos, opting for rentals instead.
Which directly strangles the middle class from building generational wealth through homeownership. The proposed fix is legislative reform. Reducing the statute of limitations for those non-structural defects down to 4 years and mandating pre-litigation mediation to curb frivolous lawsuits.
Because fixing this liability law is really the only way to unlock homeownership for the working and middle class.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. Once we fix the bureaucracy and the legal liabilities, how do we physically build our way out of this hole?
The actual construction phase.
Right. We have this massive physical space issue right in front of us. Downtown LA has enormous empty office towers sitting right next to people who desperately need homes.
Yeah.
Why aren't we just converting those empty offices into apartments right now?
Because of the financial cliff tied to our building codes. Downtown LA is currently sitting at over a 33% office vacancy rate.
Which is huge.
Huge. Without intervention, that office market risks losing $69.5 billion in assessed value over the next decade.
$69 billion.
Yeah. But converting an office building isn't just putting up drywall. Under current building and fire codes, converting even a few floors of an office tower triggers what is called a full building change of use.
Meaning the developer has to bring the entire 40-story structure up to modern codes.
Right.
Including full seismic retrofits for the whole tower, just to put apartments on floors 10 through 15.
Exactly, which instantly makes the project financially impossible. No one is going to do that. The proposed fix is to treat partial building conversions like tenant improvements. Let developers update and convert the specific floors they are working on without forcing them to seismically rebuild an entire skyscraper.
That makes so much sense.
And alongside retrofitting the towers we already have, we must unblock what urban planners refer to as the missing middle. These are the triplexes, fourplexes, and courtyard apartments.
The neighborhood scale stuff.
Right. They are generally the fastest way to add gentle neighborhood scale housing without sparking the massive political zoning battles that large towers usually trigger.
But if a small, community-based builder tries to put a simple fourplex on an empty lot, they are completely crushed by municipal impact fees before they even break ground.
The fees are staggering. They absolutely kill community projects. In California, municipal impact fees average $29,000 per unit.
Compare that to Texas, where the average is roughly $1,000 per unit.
Right. The blueprint proposes wiping out these impact fees entirely for missing middle housing. Eliminating those fees would instantly unlock a $75,000 efficiency dividend per project.
Which is enough to actually get it built.
Furthermore, these types of smaller buildings are currently subjected to highly complex commercial building codes. Extending the simpler California residential code to cover them would save millions of dollars and months of unnecessary delays.
Which perfectly sets the stage for the most physical aspect of this entire transformation, industrialized construction, or IC.
Yeah.
We are talking about factory-built housing, modular volumetric units, and 3D printing. The potential here is massive.
The data strongly supports that potential. Factory-built methods can save 20% on hard costs and cut construction timelines entirely in half.
But yet, despite those incredible metrics, factory-built housing makes up less than 5% of new residential construction in California.
Less than 5%, yeah.
If the savings are that obvious, why isn't every developer buying modular units?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the barrier to scaling industrialized construction isn't a lack of technology, it is a rigid policy framework.
The toxic ground again.
Exactly. Our regulations were historically designed for site-built construction, where a crew swings hammers outdoors and city inspectors visit the site at various stages. When you try to force a hyper-efficient factory environment into that old regulatory framework, you create massive friction.
Right.
For example, under current rules, a factory-built unit cannot be legally inspected or approved until a specific physical site has been assigned an assessor's parcel number, or APN.
Wait, so a factory can't just build a stockpile of housing modules in advance?
Nope.
They have to wait for the red tape to clear on a specific patch of dirt before they are even allowed to turn the assembly line on.
Exactly. That completely undermines the point of a factory. The reform proposed here is APN sequencing reform. It would untether the inspection of the unit from the final parcel of land, allowing these factories to operate more like car dealerships.
Okay, car dealerships.
Yeah, they could build inventory in advance, and the moment demand arises and a site is ready, they simply deploy the product.
But to scale that up, these factories need massive upfront capital to build their assembly lines. And the blueprint points out that state intervention is needed to de-risk that investment. By establishing state bonding programs and loan guarantees, the government can absorb some of the initial risk.
Right, because if the state backs the loans, private capital will finally feel confident enough to finance these factory projects.
Okay, so we have the structural bureaucracy streamlined, and we have factories prepared to churn out housing modules.
Yeah.
But none of that matters if the fundamental funding and infrastructure pipelines don't work.
The plumbing.
Right. We need to look at Measure ULA.
Okay.
And just to be completely clear with you listening, we aren't taking a political stance here, nor are we endorsing these specific viewpoints. We are strictly unpacking the data and the arguments presented in this specific blueprint regarding the measure's market impact.
Important disclaimer.
Measure ULA is a tax on high-value real estate transactions intended to fund affordable housing. But what is the actual effect it is having on the production pipeline?
According to the data analyzed in the blueprint, Measure ULA is inadvertently suppressing new housing production. The analysis shows an 18% decline in new housing production.
18%.
Which translates to about 1,910 fewer units being built per year. The underlying dynamic is that Measure ULA harms the financial feasibility of market rate projects.
Mm.
And because most market rate developments are actually the engines that subsidize and bundle affordable units through density bonuses, suppressing that market rate pipeline directly chokes off affordable housing production.
The blueprint doesn't call for throwing the measure out entirely, but rather applying precision reforms.
Precision reforms, right.
The suggestion is to exempt multifamily buildings constructed within the last 15 years, removing the financial penalty that currently deters new construction. Then, they propose taking the remaining revenue and channeling it into a well-governed gap financing fund prioritized for opportunity hubs.
Opportunity hubs.
Yeah, these are projects that intentionally co-locate housing with transit access, childcare, and health services.
So what does this all mean when we get down to the actual dirt? We can finance a building, but a physical apartment is completely useless if it can't connect to the electrical grid.
The physical infrastructure bottlenecks are severe. Late-stage utility delays, specifically waiting on the Department of Water and Power for service planner reviews and the placement of electrical transformers, frequently derail projects right at the finish line.
Right at the end. You can have a fully completed apartment complex sitting entirely empty for months, simply because the developer and the city are fighting over where to place the electrical transformer.
Wow.
And for factory-built housing, which requires early, locked-in design commitments, late-stage utility shifts are fatal to the project.
To fix this gridlock, the blueprint suggests pairing a proposed $10 billion statewide housing bond with local enhanced infrastructure finance districts, or EIFDs.
EIFDs are incredibly useful tools. They capture the future tax increment of a developing area to fund infrastructure today. This money would proactively fund utility upgrades, microgrid connectivity, and backbone infrastructure.
Ensuring the electrical grid is fully prepped and waiting before the buildings actually arrive on site.
Exactly, before they arrive.
And we can't forget the digital gridlock. The physical wiring of the city needs an upgrade, but so does the digital wiring. Right now, a developer has to navigate 10 or more separate disconnected software interfaces just to submit plans.
It's a mess.
The blueprint proposes leveraging the massive IT infrastructure investments already being made for the 2028 Olympics to build an AI-enabled e-permitting platform. They point to Singapore's cloud-based portal as the gold standard.
Singapore's model is brilliant. Imagine a centralized cloud-based portal where artificial intelligence evaluates architectural plan sets for site fit, code compliance, and even embodied carbon in real time.
That sounds like science fiction compared to what LA has now.
Right. Because it is centralized in the cloud, all 12 city departments can review the project concurrently rather than sequentially.
It could compress permitting timelines from years or months down to just weeks. It provides the exact kind of transparent, standardized, rapid review process that factory-built construction desperately needs in order to scale up.
Precisely.
So we have covered a massive amount of ground today. The core takeaway from this deep dive is that Los Angeles's housing crisis isn't some unsolvable mystery of nature. It is a documented operational failure. Fixing it doesn't require inventing a brand new technology.
No, the technology exists.
It requires a structural, regulatory, and technological revolution. A willingness to rewire the local bureaucracy, adopt uniform statewide codes, and aggressively scale industrialized construction.
This raises an important question, though.
Okay.
Why does all of this matter to you? Because wherever you live, whether it's Los Angeles, London, or a growing town in Texas, the invisible plumbing of local bureaucracy, zoning laws, and infrastructure ultimately dictates the cost, the shape, and the vitality of your neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
The administrative rules you don't see are actively shaping the streets you walk on every single day.
But before we wrap up, I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over. Something that wasn't explicitly covered in the sources, but that naturally bubbles up when you look at a blueprint this sweeping. The plan we just discussed outlines how to physically and legally churn out 2.5 million homes using factory-built efficiency, uniform statewide codes, and AI-driven permitting.
A beautiful machine of ultimate efficiency.
Exactly. But if Los Angeles successfully executes this, if it transitions into this hyper-efficient, industrialized, standardized city of city, yes, how will that fundamentally alter the cultural and architectural soul of the city?
That's a great point.
Los Angeles is famous for its eclectic, weird, deeply individualized neighborhoods. If the future of housing is pre-approved plan sets and modular units rolling off an assembly line like car dealerships, will a standardized, factory-built LA still feel like LA? Or is that simply the necessary price of progress?
Yeah.
Will solving the housing crisis ultimately require sacrificing the city's unique, messy architectural identity so that everyone finally has a roof over their head?
It is the ultimate tension between scale and soul.
It really is. Something to think about the next time you walk through your neighborhood. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive today. Keep questioning the systems around you. Keep looking for the invisible rules, and we will see you next time.